Hello.
Ooh.
Oh, sorry. I'll keep it down if everyone's sleeping still. Welcome. Wow. This is a packed house. I was hoping they'd put us in the big room. I guess this will have to do. Well, congratulations for those of you who managed to set your clocks ahead. Who's as hungover as Rob? Anyone? Excellent. These are the dangers of partying. All right. So, you can start us off.
Yeah.
I'm going to caffeinate and hydrate.
Oh.
In equal parts.
Apparently somebody didn't have his coffee yet. So, hi, everybody. Welcome to Everyone is a Design Critic. This gentleman is going to introduce himself.
Hi. I'm Jason Santa Maria. I am a web designer from Brooklyn, New York.
My name is Rob Weichert. I am a web designer from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Philly. Now, before we really kind of get into everything here, we wanted to start with just sort of a quick exercise, and hopefully something that'll kind of wake people up by allowing them to be vocal, maybe stretch their legs and their lungs and their vocal cords. So we're gonna throw a few website designs up on the screen, and I just want to kind of hear what people have to say about their design. To begin with, this is Delicious. I'm sure pretty much everybody's familiar with this. It's a social bookmarking site where you bookmark stuff and you share it with your friends and you comment on it and whatever. So just yell it out. I want to hear what people have to say about this design, good or bad. Simple statements, go. Anyone?
Delicious, yes.
I'm hearing delicious. I'm hearing boring. Functional.
Useful.
Useful. Undesigned, organized, okay. Vanilla, okay. Craigslist, okay. Good. All right, I'm gonna quickly move to the next one. This is the homepage for Windows Vista. Everybody's probably familiar with this as well. This is Microsoft's operating system. So this page needs to. Okay, there's snakes in the audience. So this page needs to, you know, tell us about Windows Vista, let us get to whatever info we need to know about Windows Vista, etc. So, the design of this page, let's hear it. What do you think?
Corporate, confusing.
Corporate, confusing, PR?
Busy.
Cold, expected.
Get off the stage.
Designed by committee. Get off the stage. Okay. This is Senator John McCain. He's this. Wow.
We might need to go rework this.
Yeah, some people have some opinions here. I like it. He's the Arizona senator or something like that. I think he's running for president. So this site needs to let you know about him and his stance on things and why you should vote for him and give him your money and help him destroy the country. So, the design of this site, let's hear it.
Legless?
What? AARP is my favorite so far. Anyone else? Not Mike Huckabee, military. That's interesting. Blue. Patriotic, cheap cologne. Okay. All right, cool. Where are the bombs? Good. So we want to thank you for helping us prove that everyone's a design critic, and have a great day.
Yes, you've been tricked. Let's play Duck, Duck, Goose. Right, so what we've seen here, you know, with all of these things that we've been chatting out are sort of, some are opinions, some are more factual statements, some are just observations of what the designs are. And what we're going to look at today is what's actually valuable there. What's a valid critique? What's an invalid critique? How to form a valid critique? There I am. And
his features are even bigger up there.
Thank you. So to start off, let's... Do we only have an hour for this? It's going to take us a while.
Go.
So, yes, let's get us all on the same page, and let's define what a critique is. Can we get the screen back? Thank you. So, critique, a democratic judgment over the suitability of a subject for the intended purposes. There's two really important things you want to notice here. The absence of the word opinion. Opinions are important, but they don't factor in quite the same way when you're critiquing something. Because, the other point, what's the purpose? Everything that you design has some sort of intended purpose. You're trying to communicate a message, whether you're selling something or trying to get people to act upon something or inform. There's a purpose behind the design, and opinion doesn't factor into that really at all. You're really just trying to judge how accurate and how well it's achieving that purpose.
So, for example, this is a doorknob, which I'm sure everybody knows. Let's hear it for the doorknobs. All right. So the purpose of the doorknob, obviously, it needs to allow me to open the door. It has to be easily seen and grasped, and I need to understand how it works. It also helps keep the door closed. And I also need to be able to throw it in a pillowcase with a bunch of other doorknobs in case somebody should compel me to beat the crap out of them. This is a quarter. It's 25 cents. It's one quarter of a dollar, American currency. It's not worth as much as it used to be. I need to be able to exchange it for goods and services. I need to be able to flip it in case I can't figure out what I'm going to do or say next. And like the doorknob, I need to be able to throw it into a sock with a bunch of other quarters in case somebody should compel me to beat the crap out of them, which happens quite often. So purpose is really the key here. Purpose is what we're probably going to be harping on throughout this whole thing. That's what we want to focus on, the aesthetics and the function of something. If we're going to be talking about that, it's the purpose is the focus. Oh, I'll give you that.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay.
So we're breaking this down into three bite-sized chunks, before, during, and after the critique. Very easy to follow. And in each of these, we're going to talk about the stuff that you need to do to prepare for each of these sections. So in before, you're going to be looking over all the materials that you've prepared before, or prepared alongside the design during the critique, some sort of processes to figure out how to conduct a critique with a client, and also what to be looking for, red flags, things like that. And after the critique, what to do with all the information that you've gathered afterwards. Very nice.
This is comfy.
Come on. All right. So before the critique, at this point, you've really... let's just assume that you've gone through all of the different phases before the design and actually end the design. So you've done all of your interviews with stakeholders. You've done your information architecture. You've done all of your discovery. Hopefully you have content at this point. You're really looking to gather up all these materials and really review them, because you've been using all of this stuff for so long that it's sort of like second nature, and you understand the information architecture and you understand all of the planning that you've done. But in order to accurately present the designs you've created to the client, you need to sort of get all this back in your head again. You need to be able to reiterate the purpose, basically, of why things look the way that they do and what was informing them, what informs that design. So you look back at the information architecture, make sure that you can speak to why navigation looks a certain way, why things are structured a certain way, why things are where they are on the pages, and why the content that's on the pages is there. Look back at any sort of research that you've done into color palettes or, we're going to get more into this later, but any sort of style guides. All of this stuff needs to be present not only in the way that you present the designs, but also in the designs themselves. So fact-checking your work, but also preparing in the way that you're going to be presenting this stuff to the client. When we get into the actual presentation in a little bit, we're using a real client from HappyCog named Micah. So you're going to see a little bit more of this stuff later. Once you have all that, it's really important, and I mean, a lot of this seems elementary, but it's so easy to forget. Form a description. Just jot it down in your sketchbook. Make sure that you hit on all the key points that you need to say about a design, because it's so easy to forget them once you're sitting in front of a client. You know, you might run through this back in the office with a couple of your people, and still, once you get into the client, you're like, it's blue, and there's your logo. Specifying your roles. Basically, once you go into this presentation, you need to make sure that everybody on your team knows what they need to do. So a lot of times there'll be like a creative director or a designer. They're the ones going to be presenting the designs, but you also need to have other people there who are going to take notes. Depending on how large the project is, you might need to have a project manager or someone to deal with the budget, someone to speak about technical concerns. Make sure that everybody knows what their role is, so no one's walking out, stepping on each other's toes or anything like that. And most importantly, that people on your team are taking notes for this and that you can record everything that happens. Lastly, this is an exclusive engagement. So in the same way that you don't want to go into a client's office and have like 30 people sitting there looking at your designs, you don't want to bring 20 people either from your team. Only bring as many people as you need to because, I mean, as you can see by this chart, the more people involved, the longer the critique is going to take. As you get up to, say, about 100 people in the room, you're looking at hundreds of thousands of hours in a meeting. So keep it light.
Okay, so once you've done all your prep work and your before the critique stuff and figured out, you know, what you need to do before you get in there, then you're in there. This is the during the critique portion of the program, which we introduced earlier. So to begin with, you want to do the setup. You want to frame the discussion for everybody in the room so that everybody's on the same page and understands how things are going to work. So to begin with, you want to recap the project to date and talk about basically where it's been, where it currently is, and where it's going. So you want to talk about all the previous phases. You know, if it's a website design, then it would be something like, okay, you know, we did the kickoff and the discovery phase and the information architecture and this and that. Today we're going to be talking about the designs. After today, you know, once the design is solidified, whatever, we're going to move on to the rest of the project, the build, the CMS, whatever. So you just want to, you know, contextualize the day's discussion within the scope of the whole project. You want to manage expectations. You want to make sure everybody understands what to expect from the day. And ordinarily, for me, this is a matter of just explaining that, you know, since this is an initial design that we're going to be showing today, it's broad strokes. It's, you know, some pieces might be missing. It might be actually way off visually. There could be all kinds of problems. But the point here is to figure out both what we're doing right and what we're doing wrong. So you want to make sure that people aren't really freaked out when they see something that they might not have expected. Could I get, okay, cool. Then you want to outline the design strategy. So we're going to be showing three concepts in just a little bit. And so we want the client to understand that these are three designs that were not done in a vacuum. There's a specific strategy that went into how all three of them relate to each other. So we wanted to basically come up with a strategy that allows the client to have three distinct options, you know, that gives them a variety of things to choose from, a variety of ways of solving the same problem. So we want to make sure that they understand that. Next, we want to establish the goal. And in this case, it's basically, we've got these three concepts. We want to decide on one that we're going to move forward with the revisions. And that doesn't mean that, you know, there's not a lot that we can learn from the other designs, but ultimately, we're going to narrow things down, so we want to decide on one concept that's going to be the foundation for the revisions going forward. You want to keep the conversation problem-focused rather than solution-focused. Keith Robinson calls this solutioneering, which I think is great. And basically what tends to happen is people will see things and be like, okay, well, I'd really prefer if this was moved over here and this was this color and this moved down here. And that's really solution-focused thinking that's kind of inappropriate for the situation. You need to remind the client that, you know, you're a designer, you're a problem solver, that's what they hired you for. You need to be talking about problems, and then, you know, when you're working on revisions, that's when you solve those problems. Because it can be problematic when you're coming up with these solutions, you know, as you're talking about the design, sometimes some solution that you committed to earlier isn't going to line up with a solution that you decided on later. So just keep things problem-focused. You can consolidate all that stuff later and then solve them. You want to talk about holistic design, the fact that each of these designs, even though they're part of this overall strategy, they're each individual, how shall we say, sort of sovereign entities. You know, they've each found a specific way of carefully balancing the elements involved, and it can be easy to disrupt that by introducing something sort of foreign. So you want to discourage what we call buffet-style you know, feedback, like, well, I really like this element from the first design, this element from the second design, this one from the third design. So if we smash them all together, it'll be the perfect design, right? No, it won't. So you need people to understand that these are holistic. This is a holistic thinking thing, and we want to avoid that kind of thing. We're going to talk a little bit more about that later too. And last but not least, you want to set a time limit. If there's a time limit in place from the beginning, it's easy to keep things focused, and people are more likely to prioritize really what needs to be discussed. And if there's not a time limit, sometimes these things can spiral out of control. And as we saw from that chart earlier, if there's, you know, a number of people and there's no time limit, you know, you could be spending your life in this critique. So you want to, you know, set a time limit. Maybe it's 2 hours, maybe it's 3 hours, maybe it's 15 minutes. It all depends. You know, this is a circumstantial sort of thing. But helps keep a focus if you set a time limit.
Right on. So at this point in the process and in the meeting that you're in, you're probably boring your client to death. And they're really excited to see all the pretty
especially
stuff.
Especially if it's me doing all
that. That's right. So we'll assume that, you know, I've already sort of briefed the client about these are broad strokes, you know, everything's not all necessarily tight. Just to explain the process that we go through, we have three different designs that we do for any sort of presentation. And based on those, we ask the client to pick one of the designs that we move forward with, and then we revise it two more times. So three rounds of design. For the purposes of this presentation, we're going to be talking about MICA, an actual client of ours, which stands for the Maryland Institute College of Art. And our client is actually in the audience. Hello. Hi. Don't worry. We won't embarrass you much. Maryland Institute College of Art. MICA is a university in Baltimore, Maryland, very prestigious art school. I did not get accepted there.
He's getting his revenge now.
That's right. In the past, it's really been known as sort of a painting college, but recently all of their other disciplines have really been getting a lot more prime time, especially design, with instructors like Ellen Lupton and people like this. And so they decided to have this, pursue sort of an overall rebranding and sort of redirection from where they were going visually. And this is their old website, which has the new logo attached to it at this point. But something you can see here in this image, which is really interesting, and this sort of exemplifies MICA, these two buildings here, this is the main area campus of MICA. On the right side, you have the old main building, and this is kind of where this was MICA, like years and years and years ago. This was MICA, this one building. And across the street, you have the Brown Building. Two very different buildings. One's very modern, lots of glass. One's sort of classical. And this really represents MICA well, because there's this interesting dichotomy between sort of the classical, the modern, the old and the new, the rough and the smooth. Lots of different dichotomies in that way. And that really represents not only the campus, but the people on campus. So in redesigning the site, we had to address some of the concerns that this site wasn't addressing, stuff like really representing all of the different types of student body, undergrad, alumni, not only that, but staff, as well as really pushing a lot of the artwork to the forefront. If this is an art school, you're not really getting a great idea of what kind of work is coming out of it, what sort of life the students have, anything like that. So these are the things that we wanted to address in the redesign. And the client knows all this. I'm recapping this for context for you guys. So this is a different version of that new logo. This was done by Pentagram. And if you see, there's some texture here, and that's being picked up from all the different stuff around campus. Earlier on, you saw those photos with the little color swatches. Those were photos that Pentagram, Abbott Miller, and Ellen Lupton took when they were redesigning this logo to sort of inform what the design was going to look like. So these textures really permeated through some of the design work that we did, and also this sort of style of the old and the new, with this like big blocky slab serif with the modern strokes. This also informs some of the design work that we did as well, so that we would work within sort of that redesign package that they created. I want to take just a little bit aside here, because when we're doing this walkthrough, I think that it's really important to kind of introduce the designs like you would introduce a friend at a party. And what I mean by that is, let's say that I was going to introduce Rob. If I was at a party and I was going to introduce Rob, I wouldn't say, this is my friend Rob Weichert. He was born in 1970 in Alaska, and his mom was in the circus, and she was a bearded lady, and that's where he gets his beard from. And later on, I mean, you don't need that kind of detail. What I would do, I would just say, this is my friend Rob Wakert, we went to school together, he's into graphic design, go. And I mean, that kind of detail is all that you need. Everything else is going to be filled in later in the discussion that follows. So when you're presenting these designs, you just sort of need to touch on the important points, give people context, and move right along. Everything's going to be brought up again later. So this is one of the designs that we did. And each one of these sort of gets back to the strategy portion that Rob was talking about. So this design focuses more on, like, students. You see this great, you know, bright, shining face of a student. Not only that, it's sort of profound. She's standing alongside her artwork. Nice little quote about the college, what things mean to her there. Much better organization of navigation. We're pulling in some of those colors from the new branding, some of those textures right down the page, really simple news and events. Easy. Here's a subpage. We also do a subpage for each of these designs. This follows along very nicely as well. You know, you see all those textures that we pull out of the logo, some of the new palette for the colors, and it really feels like, you know, it brings together the whole package with the homepage. Just really quick bullet points. This is the second design that we did. This one focuses a lot more on architecture for the campus, which is a really important part of the student life there, and also a large image of the student artwork. We're not really focusing on students on this one, pushing the artwork to the forefront. This one also picks up a lot of the on the architecture of the campus with some of the angularity, which you can see like at the bottom there. Very, very modern looking, also picking up on some of the colors. This follows through right into the subpage, more of that angularity, really sort of shaking up the layout with those angles. And the third design, this one focuses a lot more on student artwork. So we're really pushing all the artwork to the forefront and getting a lot of that artwork out there, like the staff artwork, but also student, alumni, and really make sort of this bold, bold use of the grid and really bold use of layout. What's interesting about this one, too, is if you're to click alongside those thumbnails next to that big piece of artwork, you can change the color palette, change the artwork, a few things change within the site so people can kind of customize it as they're seeing more artwork. Just a different way to see more of the work as you're moving forward. And this follows through right to the subpage as well. So there we have it. 1, 2, and 3 designs. Like we said before, these are roughs. Maybe not everything is, you know, fully tightened down, but those are things that happen in the discussion and in the rounds that follow this. Just introducing these, and then we can go back through in more detail.
So the discussion begins. And this is fun because everybody's just been listening to you talk for the last, like, hour or whatever, and then everybody's, like, chomping at the bit to say what they have to say. And so that's what happens in the discussion. So we want to go through some sort of protocol things that you definitely want to hit in the discussion, and then a little bit later, some kind of points that may come up, that often come up, won't necessarily, just stuff to keep in mind. But as for the protocol, the most important thing, of course, is what works and what doesn't. This is the first question. This is the fundamental question. Here are the designs. What do you think? What works? What doesn't? Again, problem-focused, not solution-focused.
Right, so if we're looking at this design, it's important to figure out, you know, can people find the navigation? Do they find the search box? Does it make sense that, you know, what this artwork is it student artwork, stuff like that? And just making sure that everything makes sense and figuring out if that's working and if not, what's not working.
You want to keep moving. It's really easy to get hung up on little details and just spend a lot of time talking about one little thing. You want to keep the discussion moving, keep it fairly broad. Again, this is another good thing about setting that time limit, so people stay focused, people have a sort of priority about what they're talking about.
Right, so we don't want to be talking about, you know, are there 3 thumbnails, are there 4 thumbnails, should this thumbnail be a little bit higher, things like that. These aren't details that really matter at this point. You're just trying to capture the overall feeling of a design.
The thumbnail should be higher.
Yes.
You want to make sure each design is given adequate discussion. It's a lot of times there will be a clear favorite from the beginning. Everybody will be like, oh, that's great, I love that one, and they might not even have anything to say about the other ones. You want to encourage them to find something to say about the other ones because, for one thing, it's, you know, first impressions don't always last. Sometimes somebody will say, that's my favorite, but then after some discussion they might decide, oh, actually, I kind of like this one better. And also, even if that doesn't happen, the other designs, there's things to be learned from them, you know, whether they're doing things right or wrong. There's things to be learned from discussing them.
And in the case of Mica, people really gravitated initially to the third design because it was very bold with the artwork. And a lot of discussion happened there, but we made sure that we would go back through all three of the designs and see what was working there as well. So people really liked the way that the navigation worked on the second design. They really liked how student-focused the first design was and sort of bringing that, you know, student face, putting a face with the college to everything, and how that also filtered down into the subpages, especially number two. Like, the navigation was really nice in the way that we could load up lots and lots of navigation, and it's not going to seem too overwhelming. So we had to make sure to go through all of the stuff, highlight everything that was working. Whether or not they go with those designs, we can see what kind of strategies work for that information.
I'm going to remind again to stay problem-focused because this is it just can't stress it enough. And this goes both ways. You know, a lot of times the client will be suggesting solutions, but a lot of times the client will suggest, you know, mention problems, and you'll sort of be compelled to solve them on the spot because you might think, oh, yeah, of course, we could do this, we could do that. You want to really try to restrain yourself from doing that kind of thing because, again, you could be committing yourself to something that's not necessarily going to work later.
And one of the discussions we had about this design was, you know, that masthead is pretty far down on the page. Is that really conventional? Should it maybe, you know, be a little bit different? Maybe we should move it to the top. And we had to really watch what we were going to talk about when that came up, because if we were to say, yeah, we can just move that to the top, because everything that you move, everything that you change is going to affect everything else on the page. And it's really dangerous to sort of commit to anything, especially in a meeting, right there on the spot, saying, yes, we can change that. And then you get back to the office and you change it, and you're like, oh, shit, now my layout's screwed.
Oh, the Frankenstein monster. How many people know the Frankenstein monster? A lot of people know the Frankenstein monster. How many people have fallen prey to the Frankenstein monster? Yeah, this is in keeping with the holistic design thing we were talking about before, and it's nasty business. I don't even know how to expand on what we said before, but it needs reiterating. You know, one from column A, one from column B, one from column C. Bad news, bad news, bad news. It might work. Don't know till you try. Don't commit.
Right, and like I said, you know, the student-focused stuff might have worked in number one. We might have had some really strong navigation structures in number two, and all of that artwork might have felt really good in number three. But if we were to sandwich all those together, it would just be a mess. Fire bad.
Okay, so that's kind of the basic protocol stuff that we always try to hit, you know, the important points to make sure you hit always. But here are some other things that tend to come up that don't necessarily... but are definitely worth keeping in mind and kind of being ready for. So to begin with, perspectives vary. I mean, everybody knows this, but I think we get so into what we're doing that sometimes we forget that, you know, a design looks different really in every set of eyes. And so whether it's, you know, a colleague, another designer, a client, your mom, your dog, whoever, the design is not going to look exactly the same to them as it looks to you. So, like, you know, this page might look like this to me. And hey, that's great. It's all very carefully considered and, you know, all this stuff. But the client really might see it more something like this. You know, why is everything so small? You need to kind of be prepared to expect the unexpected, right? And just be able to feel these things and maybe even kind of figure out the criticisms that might come in and be ready to kind of tackle them.
Right, and it's really important to not take this to a personal level. By this point, you're really sort of entrenched in what the design is. You've been working on it for weeks and weeks, and you sort of feel as though it's part of you, you know? And when you present it to someone and they start criticizing little pieces of it, you might want to take it personally. You feel like maybe they're criticizing you. So when the client says, you know, this shouldn't be blue, I think this needs to be yellow, and your first response might be something like Jeffrey Zubin said the other day, like, oh, where did you go to art school? Which in the case of Mica probably isn't going to work out anyway. but it's important to keep it about the work, keep it professional, and, you know, understand that this isn't you that they're criticizing, this is the work that they want to talk about. Hopefully that's what they want to talk about. And by the same token, you shouldn't be making it personal about them and about the views that they have. Keep it focused about the work, keep it professional.
Along those same lines, it's easy, even when you're not taking things personally, to get kind of combative. Because you're invested in your ideas, you know, you've spent a lot of time thinking about them, And you've got strong arguments for the decisions that you've made, and so you want to make those arguments forcefully if they're not being heard. It's just sort of human nature. If somebody's not understanding you, you want to sort of bludgeon the idea into them. But, I mean, we've all learned from other situations that that's more likely to put people off than to convince them. So you want to avoid being combative, stay rational and cool-headed, make your argument reasonably. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But, yelling about it or just getting really excited, I don't think they're going to be so impressed with your passion as they're going to be annoyed by how ridiculous you're being.
I've always found it's really important to stay positive. If you start to waver a little bit, when you start getting all this feedback and you start to, like, slunk down in your chair and you're like, oh, this is ruining my great portfolio piece. And the client's going to start to pick up on that, and they're going to lose faith in you and understand that, maybe this person isn't the right person to figure out my problem. So it's important to kind of stay positive and upbeat. They've hired you as a contractor, as sort of the expert for design, and you need to exude that sort of positive energy, making sure that, they are going to keep that faith in you and make sure that they understand that you're capable of handling their problem.
We can do it.
Yes.
You want to avoid jargon. Everybody knows this, right? You want to speak in a language that everybody in the room can understand. We all like hanging out with our design friends or our code friends or whatever, and, speaking in industry-specific terminology and feeling really superior with our crazy moon language. But we're communicators too, right? So we need to be able to communicate in a language everybody understands. So it's not so much an issue of I really thought it was important to have the line height be 1.5 m so that when the user resizes the text, the leading will grow in such a way that it's given the proper atmosphere for the, it's something more like, the theme of your organization is openness, so we tried to keep the typography open and light, that sort of thing. It's easy to slip into that, so you want to watch out.
Rob usually presents sort of jiggly. We all come from really different disciplines, and you might not understand exactly what it is that your client does. They might not understand exactly what you do. So it's important to find common ground in the way that you're speaking about these designs. They might not, like Rob said, they might not understand the terms that you're using for design, or you might not understand the terms they're using to, like, pitch their product. But you can find common ground just based on, normal human stuff. So if something in the design is like, I'm not sure about that orange feels wonky to me, but this brochure over here, this has a really nice orange. And it's okay to find this sort of middleman to help communicate the things that they don't know how to communicate, if they don't understand things like hue and saturation and how to speak about those things. And even if it's a website that's doing a job, doing something that they like, if that's what they need to make their point, that's okay. It doesn't mean that you have to copy what that website's doing, but it sort of bridges the gap and it makes the communication happen.
Okay, this is the fun part. So we're going to need a volunteer from the audience. Anyone will do. We do not discriminate based on anything other than intelligence. Somebody who's not afraid to get their hands dirty and their face bloody. Anyone? We're not those things. Hey, there we go. Come on down. Let's give a hand for our brave volunteer, please. Give the mic.
I've got it.
Are you guys excited?
There's some excitement. Yeah,
come on up.
Can you tell us your age, sex, and location, please?
My name is Deanne Graham.
Deanne Graham.
I'm not telling you my age.
Where did you come from, Deanne?
I come from Waco. I am an instructor in web design.
Fantastic.
For Texas State Technical College.
Cool. Everybody, this is Deanne. All right. And you have a couple minutes to hang out up here. You don't have to, like, meet somebody for an ice cream or something.
You're going to give me ice cream?
Actually. Do you want to go get ice cream after this?
That sounds good.
Yeah.
Let's just go.
Yeah, actually, who wants ice cream? This is ice cream's better than this, right? Okay,
why don't you come over here?
Yeah, come on over. And we are, what we're going to do here is Deanne's going to be our client, okay? And she is going to help us introduce the top five client requests, which hopefully will show up on the screen here. Hey, the top five client requests. And this is the really fun, messy stuff that's really difficult to solve. These are things that are that show up all the time. We have some sort of recommended ways to respond to these. Results vary. You know, using good health and good luck. So, what I'm going to do is we're gonna bring them up on the screen. I'm going to ask you to read it off, and if you could be like a little bit kind of whiny about it, that'd be cool. So, okay, here we go with the first one. Number five.
My unqualified friend has different ideas.
Very good, very good. Okay, so this is what I call the Yoko. You know, undoubtedly, somebody's going to come up with the, you know, the CEO's wife really thought we should have Dancing Jesus on the page, and I don't understand why it's not there. And this can be a really, I mean, as ridiculous as that sounds, these things happen. You need to be able to know how to respond to this. And that can, you know, you might be kind of shell-shocked. Now, occasionally, it's actually a good idea. Dancing Jesus is not usually a good idea.
Hey.
But there might be another idea that was brought up. I find that it's best to sort of initially judge the idea on its merits, right? So if it's a good idea, say, okay, you know what, that's actually a pretty good idea for X and Y reasons. In the more likely event that it's not a good idea, you want to try to reasonably explain why, and if necessary, you might tactfully remind the client why they hired you and that you kind of have some experience and research to back up your ideas. You got to be careful about that. That's all I have to say. So,
number four.
Purple is my favorite color. Why don't we use that?
That's a very interesting comment. Thank you. Yes, purple is a very good color. This one pops up all the time, you know, and something that I've found that can be helpful is if you do some sort of user interviews or any sort of stakeholder interviews in the beginning and you develop personas, it can be really handy to kind of use those personas to drive your design through the door by saying, you know, well, it's very interesting that you like purple, but we found that Sally, who's the mother of three and drives a minivan, doesn't like purple, and she doesn't expect that from your company. And this can be really useful to kind of use for the client that way. But also, if it doesn't fit in with the branding and stuff like that, you can really back up to all the documentation and the research that you did on the front end of things where, you know, purple isn't part of your palette. You know, your customers are not looking for purple from let's see, something that's not purple. UPS. UPS does not need purple. So it's interesting, or it's a good idea to kind of go back to all the information that you've collected beforehand and sort of reference that back as you're delivering this to the client.
Number three.
We need more stuff above the fold.
There's a new trend in websites where they are distributed on newsstands. And it was an unexpected thing. I didn't see it coming. Maybe you guys did. And so we still hear this 10 years later, right? It was sort of a relevant concern 10 years ago, 15 years ago, when, you know, not everybody that was initially using the web understood that there was kind of more stuff to see. If you scrolled down, there weren't scroll wheels on mice. Mouses, meese?
Moose.
At that time, you know, things have changed. There's a significant amount of research to back up the notion that people actually understand that they can scroll and find more stuff. And beyond that, it can be really disruptive to your page's hierarchy, obviously, if you're just cramming everything up in the top. And, you know, it's generally not a good idea to really buy into that fold mentality. I mean, it's going to happen. You're going to have ad specs and things like that that require it. But you want to, you know, let them know that the whole scrolling thing isn't quite the problem that it used to be.
Number two.
You know, there's so much empty space. Can't you fill that?
Yes. Yes, I can, with all of the ads that you have. This is a really common one. When there's white space on a page, that's entirely equal to space for my ads. And one of the things that I like to focus on when this comes up is just because there's empty space, it doesn't mean that it's space waiting to be filled with something. That white space contributes to the overall hierarchy of the page, obviously. Like when you have that white space, it sort of frames the content. It sort of welcomes people in. You know, it doesn't overload people with information. And it makes it a more comfortable experience. If you start to cram ads into every open space, or not just ads, but photographs, any sort of amounts of content, it really takes away from the overall hierarchy, especially if you've really considered that hierarchy on the front end of things, and then you're adding all the stuff later. It can really be disruptive.
All right, are you guys ready for this? Because the number one is coming. And this is sort of what we're all here for.
Can you guess
it? Yeah, so, okay. Can we, you know what? Let's get some sort of artificial drum roll. Let's. Woo! That's not quite what I had in mind. Okay.
I feel like I'm.
All right. The number one client request is.
You know, my cousin's friend made this logo.
Oh, this is nice.
Can you make my logo bigger?
That was a wonderful embellishment, by the way. That, that was like a twofer. That's great. No. Obviously, it's not just no, as much as it should be. But no, I think it's best just to sort of remind them as much as you can that the content on the page is not the logo. The logo supports and imposes a brand upon the content. It is not the content itself, period. No.
Oh, let's have a round of applause, please.
Thank you so much,
Deanne. Thank you so much, Deanne. We'll get ice cream later. All right, so you've had your presentation. Now it's time to figure out what to do with all of that information after the critique. Like we said, you're not trying to solve problems on the spot. Take notes, record everything, make sure you have everything accounted for. Go back to the office and start to evaluate this. Compile all your stuff with your people, make sure that everything's accounted for, and then go through it. Make sure that whatever you want to change, you have a plan for. It's not going to entirely disrupt everything because all these changes are going to affect one another. Document it. Not only for internal purposes, document it and then send it back to your client so that they know what you plan to do and that you're on the same page as them. Because if you figure out, you know, in the critique, these are the changes we have to make, I make them and then I represent it, and the client says, what about X, Y, and Z that I said during the meeting too? And you know that they didn't say that during the meeting, but they're still pulling it out on you then. Document it so that everyone is accountable. And once you actually document it, you have to follow up on this stuff. Just because you tell the client you're going to do something, you actually have to do it. That's the kicker. And this process is pretty much the one that we use through all the rounds. Sometimes it changes into round two, round three. It's a little bit more informal. Sometimes it's shorter. But basically, wash, rinse, repeat. This works all the way through. And really, this is an ideal process. These are ideal tips, ideal ways to do things. It doesn't always go this way. Your mileage may vary, and this is something that works for us. Your process might be a little bit different. It might be longer, shorter, different phases, different people. But this is sort of a baseline that we use on every project that really works out well for us and especially gives us the kind of feedback and makes us have the kind of discussions that we need to be having. So it isn't all just opinion-based and talking about, you know, I prefer this color to that color, all that stuff. So thank you very much.
I think we've got about 15 minutes left.
Yeah, let's have some questions.
Yeah, let's hear what people have to say if they have anything to say.
We have the
questions,
other
comments. Oh,
wireless.
Mr. Essel has something to say. I think there's a microphone right next to
wireless.
You.
Someone.
And can we get this microphone back over there, please? Can somebody?
Thanks. What kind of language do you use to talk clients out of the Frankenstein monster?
I'm really big on that word holistic. And I'm really big on pointing out the fact that just because a solution works in one place, it's not necessarily going to work in another. Now, again, it's you know, mileage varies, right? Like, you know, sometimes they're going to hear that and understand it. Sometimes they're not. But that's kind of the basic thing I really try to impress upon them. What can be kind of dangerous is showing them examples. And if you say, okay, fine, I'll do it the way that you want and show you how wrong you are, and then, you know, it'll be a disaster, and they'll be like, oh, great, that's exactly what I wanted, right? So, you know, you got to watch out for that. But, yeah, I'm really big on that whole holistic thing. You know, these things are carefully fit together. You want to be careful about disrupting it, that sort of thing.
Could also have someone fake a heart attack just to disrupt the meeting. Sorry, we'll call you later.
Hi.
This came to me when you mentioned negative space. Mm-hmm. And as a designer, it's sometimes hard to argue with success. And when you mentioned negative space, the first thing that came to mind to me was Amazon's website, where there is virtually no negative space.
Yeah.
How do you talk to a client about an issue like that?
I think it really gets back to the purpose that we were talking about really early on in the talk. And it's really about, you know, does it make sense to have this much content above the fold, or, you know, whether or not there is a fold? But if it doesn't make sense to have, you know, no white space, basically. And I know that Amazon particularly does lots and lots of like A/B testing and lots of testing in that way. And I mean, if they figured out that that works for them, then that's cool. And I mean, it's going to be different for every project. It's, you know, it's always different. But I've found that I like to read with white space. I know that a lot of the people that I design with and a lot of the people that I design for like the white space as well. And it's usually a pretty easy sell, I feel like. But
well, yeah, not always. But I used to work for somebody. I designed catalogs, and they were all about, you know, 10 pounds of shit in a 5-pound bag. Just cram as much stuff in there as you can. And they simply could not be talked out of it. If you have somebody especially, you probably don't, but if you happen to have somebody especially arty, you might point out that, like, music isn't so much about the notes as it is, like, the space between the notes. That's never worked for me, but it's worth trying. Yeah?
What do you do when a client always it won't shut up about another organization's website and how much they like that? Because sometimes we'll put together a real nice page, we'll put in a series of pages, show it to them, and then they say, well, it's not like Duke Law, or it's not like Tulane, right? And I like this. I mean, I know you're saying not to be solution oriented, but I don't know how to handle that situation when the person that keeps bringing this up, who happens to be the dean of the law school you're working for.
Right.
And we'll just preface this by saying, like, none of these are easy questions. Like, some of the stuff that comes up, and sometimes there's no way around this stuff. But something
that's a way of saying we have no answers.
The thing that's always helped me, like I said this in an earlier talk too, is like from the time that you walk in the door, you're setting yourself up as someone who isn't going to be walked over. You know, you're part of this team alongside the client, and you're basically the consultant for giving them excellent design. You know, that's what you need to set yourself up as. So when talk about, you know, this website does exactly what I want this website, you have to basically have sort of a reality check with them. Like, you're not Duke Law, mm-hmm. and we're not going to give you Duke Law. And, I mean, you have to basically lay it out for them. You hired us to make you an excellent website for who you are. Because you're not Duke Law, it cannot be Duke Law.
At the same time, though, I think it's possible to maybe use that as a reference point, you know, that a whole find common ground thing we were talking about. Mm-hmm. It might be an opportunity for you to say, okay, so you're gaga about this website, so tell me exactly what it is about it that you like. And really get them to critically analyze what they appreciate about it. And so hopefully, you know, you can maybe extract that, you know, kind of abstract quality from it and use that in what you're doing. You know, it's a matter of getting them to really try to figure out what it is that they like about something.
Sometimes
it works, sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah, that's a good point, too. I mean, sometimes clients will bring up a site just because they don't know exactly, like I was saying before, they don't know exactly how to describe what it is that they want. So the best thing that they can do is say, like, this. And
thank you very much. Yeah.
Now, you guys have kind of already touched on this already, but in terms of, like, let's say a client says that, yeah, they want the bigger logo, and you explain to them that through research, you know, the logo is only supporting the content. What happens after that if they just don't budge? Like, if they just don't budge?
Well, that is what will happen. They won't budge. I mean, that's why that's the number one, right? It's really tough to deal with, and it's really common, and they're really likely to be unwavering on it. And that's why we see a lot of gigantic logos everywhere, because that is such a difficult thing to solve. I mean, beyond, I think the reason that we offered that solution, that answer to that question, is because that's like the answer to the question. Hey, yeah. Anybody have a, I mean, I'd be really psyched to hear if anybody has an answer to this guy's question that... Oh. Mm-hmm. So you try to gauge ahead of time. So it's a matter of figuring out ahead of time, gauging how they're going to approach this sort of thing, and basically choosing your battles. Is that what you're... Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. So, okay. So he's talking about basically finding out how they would approach something like that at the beginning and then, like, being ready for it and designing around it. So I think that's reasonable.
One thing in that, too, I mean, you also have to know when to just cut your losses.
Yeah.
I mean, there are times when you can argue till you're blue in the face and it's just not going to happen. And rather than just derail the project entirely, you cut your losses, get your check, and you don't talk about it.
And use your check to buy check to buy a sniper rifle. Yeah. Over here.
Oh.
Is that... Okay, so it's a question of user research. Trying out different logo sizes, seeing how the users respond, and then using that data as leverage for your argument. That's good, too?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Person at the mic. Yes,
you. Yeah, it's you.
Hi. I recently went through one of those crits that makes you want to just gouge your eyes out when you leave.
And one of those?
We did everything right. We gathered all the information. We spoke to the stakeholders. We did homework. We had workshops upon workshops. And when we sat down and showed the designs, it was a bloodbath. Mm. And the project manager and I had different opinions. She said it would be fine. And I said, no, this is a bad, bad thing. It turned out that they lied to us. The client eventually came back and said, no, we really didn't mean all that stuff. This is what we want. And it was a 180. Is there anything that I could have done to stop that?
Doesn't sound like it. I mean, that's there's something more, that's not something wrong with
that
the design
like
so much.
That sounds like a bureaucracy issue or some kind of political...
Yeah, you basically need to take a few steps back and reassess the project at that point.
How do you represent yourself at a crit where you're sitting literally on a firing line and you know you're going to get it? You know, I mean, this is not going to go well.
You keep, like, a blindfold in your pocket. You really can, like, look the part.
Okay.
And feel more at home in that role.
Okay.
But no, that stay positive thing I think is really key at that point. No, but seriously, like, if you know,
just hand them the knife. Is that
no? But I mean, if it's a matter of they're like none of this stuff is speaking to us, you can be more like sort of, well, okay, let's talk about why it's not speaking to you know. So it's not so much like you're all, geez.
Yeah, depending on how bad it is, I would almost say just back out of the meeting at that point. Like, say, you know, this isn't going to be productive. Let's take a few steps back and reassess what it is that we're trying to do, rather than, you know, starting to talk about designs that you know that they hate already based on this stuff.
I mean, I work with nonprofits, so they're a little bit more passive-aggressive than the average corporate client.
All bets are off.
They didn't say
nonprofit.
It, that they hated it. But, you know, it's like what they look like and what they said were the exact opposite.
Yeah, awesome. That sounds familiar.
Unpleasant. Thank you.
Sure.
Over here.
I'm a little worried that I've gotten into a lazy presentation habit thanks to a couple of impatient and harried clients. Particularly, I like to produce handouts and let them kind of browse through like all the pages of design. I can be talking about design at the same time, but the one person that doesn't necessarily want to listen to my spiel is kind of done in 10 minutes, says, I like this one, and then walks out of the room. Hmm. How do you feel about handouts or leave-behinds and that type of...
We typically don't do handouts. We will actually go on-site and present the work like right there on the spot. We don't even want them to see it before we get there. And I think that that's sort of handy because the more time that people have to mull things over, the more things are going to be picking apart. Mm-hmm. And like we said, that's not really that part of the process to be doing that. And not only that, a lot of times their first instinct is usually the right one. I don't know if you've ever, like, mm-hmm. when people say, wow, I really respond to that. And as they sit with the designs for, like, 2-3 hours, something like that, if you have a ridiculous meeting, they've, like, gone across the entire spectrum. And now they're like, wow, I really like this one now. And then, you know, a half hour later, this is the one. And it's, you know, all over the map. And I think that it's more useful to sort of present the designs, talk about them right there, based on that time limit, you know, get in and get out.
It's also sort of a doing your best to direct what's happening. So if you're giving them a whole ton of freedom, right, of like, here's this stuff, look at, you know, peruse it at your will while I talk some nonsense that you're not going to listen to. You know what I mean? Like, you really want to make sure that your points are heard. And I think that handout thing can be counterproductive for that because they're going to be looking through this thing and, you know.
We got a couple minutes left. Let's do a lightning round.
Okay, yeah.
Get through all these guys. Let's go. Over here.
I was wondering, how many sketches do you guys usually pass to your clients? Because most clients obviously want the most bang for the buck, but I find that if I would pass my clients 3 sketches, that would usually throw them off. So, you know, just so many choices. And so I was wondering, what's your take on that?
When you say sketches, do you mean like the...
Like the three designs? You did. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. It really depends on what the client is looking for. I mean, sometimes 3 is right, sometimes 1 is right. But it's all about that strategy. Like, if you have a strategy and 3 designs fill that strategy and you can talk to each one of those and they all make sense, 3 is the right number. But if you know that your client, you figure out ahead of time that 3 is going to be overwhelming for them, you got to tailor the process to them.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right, we have 3 questions to get through.
Good morning. We touched on it a little bit about testing, representing the client perspective. You know, you don't always have a big budget waiting every couple of years for a big redesign project. What role do you think testing should play, and at what stage in the process that you're coming up with your designs?
That's a really good question. And I think it's a circumstantial thing, too. It's, you know, the job is going to determine what it is. So sometimes it's a matter of, you know, testing wireframes and figuring out how the interaction flow works before you get to the design. Sometimes it's testing the designs to see how people respond, both sort of functionally and emotionally to the various elements, whether it's, you know, the layout, the color scheme, all that sort of thing. I think it's really circumstantial. I don't know if mm-hmm. you have anything to add to that.
No,
but
I think you're right.
Yeah, so...
Hey, what do you do about after the meeting opinion? Someone has second thoughts. They come in informally, maybe an email, maybe a call. Do you have a formal procedure, or what do you do?
You sort of, I think you kind of go back to like a lighter procedure of what you were doing in the critique. You sort of assess the feedback as it comes in, and you figure out how it's going to impact other stuff. So hopefully, you know, it's as you've gone back to the office, and you can filter it in with the other things. And then recap, if you feel like it's going to be like, you know, a game changer or something like that, talk to the client about it. I mean, in all of this, it's really important to just have lots and lots of discussion about anything that you're worried about, anything like that.
Do you keep everybody in the loop at that point, or do you go straight by?
All of the important people, the people who have power to say yes and influence decisions, yes.
Not the little people.
No. No, because, I mean, sometimes with the client, especially like Micah, we had a handful of people that we worked with, but they also have their committees that they have to talk to. Mm-hmm. And we don't include them. We just talk to our core group.
All right, great. Thanks. Mm-hmm.
Just a comment on the Bika logo issue. I find that it comes from traditional media where you have a limited time of encounter, so you have to have a big logo on the TV or the big logo on the outdoor.
Right.
Whereas on the website... people already chose to come there, or they come through Google or wherever. So they already know where they are, so you don't have to put a big logo on
that's, there. Yeah, that's a very good point. It's
You're
not so much about, like, you know, hey, what?
I said he was a good client.
Oh. Okay.
If he's a client.
But yeah, it's not so much about, hey, you know, here we are, look at us, look at us. It's like, you know, people already figured out who you are, and they're there. And they're trying to find stuff out. Your logo could be getting in the way. So yeah, that's a great point. Thanks. I guess that's all. So thanks, everybody, for coming.
Thank you.